Hello and welcome back to In the Corner. We are here for our 20th episode. It is Monday, February 23rd. I'm very excited for this episode. We had one of the best events in a long time yesterday, which was the Last Crescendo headlined by Dmitry Bivol, taking Artur Beterbiev's undisputed light heavyweight titles away from him in their rematch. It was a fantastic fight. I thought it was way better than the first fight. You had a lot of other really, really good fights on that card, some unexpected ones. They were all very competitive for the most part. He also had a very good UFC fight night last night, tons of finishes. Bit of an anticlimactic end to the main event, but still a very good card. We'll talk about that. Luis Neri fought. He returned and beat Kayonosuke Kameda in Mexico. And then tomorrow, we've got Junto Nakatani, David Cuellar on top of a very good card in Japan. It's unbelievable how good that three-fight card is, and it's just nobody's talking about it because we had this amazing seven-fight card. So we're going to talk about all that today and more. Let's just hop right into it. I want to talk about this main event yesterday. My goodness, Artur Beterbiev of Dmitry Bivol 2 was incredible. These guys, I tweeted, they are a match made in heaven to beat the hell out of each other. I mean, they are so, so good. Every now and then, you just, I feel like every fighter, this is a thing where they all find their perfect dance partner. You know, it depends on who that is, how early you find it in your career, how late, but sometimes when you throw two guys in a ring together, they just create magic, and that's what these two incredible fighters are in Beterbiev and Bivol. They both have only lost once, and it's to each other. They've both beaten each other once. I mean, to be honest, I do want to see the trilogy, but for people saying that Bivol is ducking Beterbiev, I don't know if that's the case, because this whole trilogy situation feels weird, because the first fight, even though Beterbiev won, it felt undecided. You know, a lot, like 50% of people had Bivol, 50% of people had Beterbiev. So it kind of felt like a draw. Yeah, Beterbiev got the nod, but it felt like a draw. And now Bivol clearly won this fight. Not clearly, but decisively won it in terms of, you know, most people thinking so. I thought he won it for sure. So I think that, you know, Bivol kind of has it's an interesting spot here. Do I think that we should see the rematch? I would love to see it a third time. There are tremendous in the ring together. So I would like to see it. Let's just talk about this fight. So going into this fight, they both had things that they had to improve on. And I'm actually quite surprised just seeing what happened in the fight, because I thought that they both improved on exactly what they needed to, just not in the right scenario. They didn't keep what they were supposed to do last time, if that makes sense. So at least Beterbiev didn't. So if we remember the first fight, it was very close rounds for most of the fight. Early on, Bivol got the handful of rounds. Later on, Beterbiev got the handful of rounds. In the middle, very close call. But it seemed that a lot of what was happening was Bivol was more active. He was throwing more. He was landing more. But then Beterbiev was the bigger puncher. And Beterbiev would throw one punch and take away Bivol's last 10 on the judges' scorecards. And later on, he became the aggressive come-forward fighter. He was the come-forward fighter the whole fight, you know? So it was a little bit harder to score, I thought. I remember the first fight having a really difficult time scoring it. This one, not so much. But we knew going into this fight that Bivol had to fight the same way he did last time, but do more longer. Those last three rounds, he gave up. Now, he didn't give up, but he gave them to Beterbiev. Beterbiev was pushing forward, and Bivol wasn't challenging him much. Bivol, this fight, he needed to stay there later in the fight, because Bivol was up, you know, pretty far into the fight. But then those last three rounds, he just wasn't as strong, and Beterbiev took care of him. This time he needed to, you know, now that he knows he can handle Beterbiev's power, nobody else has been able to do that, he can. He knows, I can go there. I can get in there with this guy, and he can't, well, not he can't, but I know that I can survive against him. So I can be less afraid, and that's what he did. He brought the power to Beterbiev. He was the one that, honestly, it looked like he, outside of the 12th round maybe, it looks like Bivol was doing more damage to Beterbiev than other way around. Bivol was the one who was moving him around the ring for a lot of the fight, not all of it. But there were some rounds there where Bivol was the one pushing the action. He was throwing way more fantastic combinations, nonstop volume from the back foot. And then you have Beterbiev, who, by the way, Bivol kept going later. It was very different the way that happened. Beterbiev, his thing was he needed to get started earlier in the fight. And that's what he did. Third round, he puts it on. And, you know, won a lot of the rounds in the middle of the fight, I thought. It was weird. I felt like there was like three sides to this fight where you had Bivol. I gave him all three of the first few rounds. I thought that he was just moving really well. And I mean, that first round, I was like, wow, this is exactly how it started last time. I gave him the first three rounds in their first fight, you know, just kind of moving around him and stuff. And then the third round was close, but I still edged it to Bivol. next four rounds, 4 through 7, I give to Beterbiev. I thought Beterbiev was really putting it on. This was his best pressure, his best moments in the fight, you know, just starting to move Bivol around. And at this point, I was starting to think Beterbiev is starting early. Last time, you know, Beterbiev looked like this. He looked good, but it wasn't until round 8, 9 is when he started. He started in round 3 or 4. He is doing good. I think Beterbiev may win this fight if he keeps this up. But he keeps going until, you know, round 7 is when it gets a little bit more dicey. And then round 8, Bivol has a very good round. And it's clear that Beterbiev has kind of moved back a little bit. He's laid off his pressure. I don't know if it was a gas tank thing or whatever, but wasn't as aggressive, and Bivol took advantage of that. I love to see that, you know, because I was watching this fight, I'm like, Bivol, you got to get back in there, get back in there. And he did. And it was a tremendous performance from the Kyrgyzstan native. You know, just came in round 8, took control. I gave him rounds 8 through 11. Now, I know that 10 and 11 were close. I edged them both to Bivol. Round 12, I gave to Beterbiev because I felt like Beterbiev, you know, knew, okay, I have to knock him out. Otherwise, I'm going to lose this because Bivol had worked up a bit of a lead now. I had him up, I think, 7 rounds to 4? Yeah, so he needs a knockout. And he did not get it, but he looked very good. I thought that this was a better performance from both men in this rematch. I mean, it was a tremendous fight. I liked the first fight. I thought it was a very good high-level bout, but this one I thought was far better. I thought it was easier to score. I thought that it was more exciting. I thought that there was more clear work being done by both men. It was tremendous. And, I mean, the amount of Fight of the Year contenders we already have through February, this light heavyweight division, and we'll talk about this in a minute, I think the three best 12-round fights this year may have all come from 175 pounds. This, Bouatsi Smith, which opened up the card, which we're going to talk about in a minute, and Benavidez Morel were all unbelievable fights. I genuinely loved this fight so much. Now, as for what's next for these guys, I think that it is the trilogy makes the most sense. And I feel bad saying that because Benavidez has been waiting for so long to get an undisputed title shot. He was mandatory for Canelo for like 3 years. He never got it. Moves up to 175. He's like, okay, Bivol, they're not ducks. They'll fight me. And they're not ducking him, but they have their own business to take care of. And while Benavidez is certainly number one, and I feel like, you know, talking about like, oh, Benavidez should fight Callum Smith now. I'm like, I don't need to see that. I know Benavidez beats every single man in this division except for Beterbiev and Bivol. He may beat them, but those are the only guys that he'll be competitive with. So there's no point in seeing him fight again, but I also don't want him to spend the rest of the year out of the ring because Beterbiev and Bivol got to run that back a third time. I mean, this is one of the best rivalries in the sport, and I mainly say they need to run it back because right now, the fight that I most want to see, if I'm being honest, for Benavidez is Beterbiev. Can you imagine Artur Beterbiev and David Benavidez in a ring together? The carnage, the chaos that would ensue? Both high pressure, volume, aggressive, powerful punchers. It would be incredible. I'm not saying that Bivol wouldn't be good against either one of them. We know he's good against Beterbiev. He'd put on a great fight against Benavidez. But Beterbiev-Benavidez is the most exciting fight. So, but right now, Benavidez isn't mandatory to Beterbiev. He's mandatory to Bivol. If Beterbiev won this fight, there's a lot of B's. Beterbiev won this fight, I would have said, Beterbiev-Benavidez, let's do it. Now that Bivol's won it, it's like, Bivol Benavidez maybe. Bivol Beterbiev 3? Yeah, give me that. So as for what Benavidez does in the meantime, I'm not sure. We'll see. You know, he could fight a Callum Smith. I really don't know what else. I would have said if Joshua Buatsi would have won, I would have said, do Benavidez Buatsi. You know, I mean, there's not really a lot of people for him to fight. I still think that probably the number 4 guy in the division is David Morel, who he just beat. There's no point in doing that rematch, I don't think. So I guess it is just wait and see what happens with Bivol Beterbiev. Maybe what you do, because we know Beterbiev gets injured a fair bit, put Benavidez in as a replacement opponent. You know, we noticed this week we had a lot of replacement opponents and they were able to act fast, but it shows, hey, it's pretty good to have a backup guy like the UFC does for their big title fights. I think boxing should do the same. But I think that Beterbiev 3 needs to happen. Beterbiev gave Bivol the rematch. It's only fair he does the same. I know Beterbiev didn't really want to do the rematch, but he doesn't really care. He says, yeah, sure, I'll do it again. You know, I say that these guys go for historic trilogy in the 175-pound division. But another tidbit here. Bivol mentioned moving up to cruiserweight, which shocked me because he's not that big. In fact, he could go, if he were to switch a division, I would expect him to go down to 168. He could totally make 168, I think. He's not that big. Beterbiev, he could go up to 200. I mean, you see in the ring, Beterbiev's a lot bigger than Bivol. He may not be, like, taller or something, but just, like, his size, his width, you know, just, like, the girth he has to him, he's just a lot bigger and more menacing. You know, he seems more filled out. Where Bivol, I think that I would be shocked if he goes up to 200 pounds. And I know that he's already beaten guys like Zerto at 175, and I mean, he'd probably still beat him. He's that good, but I can't imagine Bivol standing next to Jayapataya or, you know, anybody else on that side, or Chris Bilm Smith or even Zerto Ramirez now. I mean, he's just so much smaller than them. I mean, I struggle to picture Beterbiev with those guys. So I think that, but when I think about Bivol and Berlanga and Canelo and Munguia and Plant, they seem more similar size. So I'd be shocked if he moves up to cruiserweight. I would like him to stay at 175. You know, there are some good contenders for him to fight. We talked about Benavidez. There's Callum Smith. There's David Morrell. There's Joshua Buatsi still, you know, if he comes back. But I don't think that moving up to cruiserweight makes a lot of sense for him now. But tremendous fight. You know, I had it 115, 113 for Dmitry Bivol. It's actually the same scorecards as the first fight, just in favor of Bivol now. It was a draw, then it was 115, 113, 116, 112. And I just want to add here that the AI judge has gotten a lot better. They scored 116, 112 for Bivol, which is pretty good. They scored, the other scorecard I saw was 115, 113 for Carlos Adames, which is also a good scorecard. There is so much to talk about from this card. I'm going to try and move through it quick, but oh my goodness. Co-main event, Joseph Parker, Martin Bacoli. Wow. And this whole situation was so weird going into this fight, because I was like, okay, how much of Bacoli are we going to get here? He's not in fight shape. He's 30 pounds heavier than he normally is. It's 2 days' notice. You know, I mean, how much is he going to still be the boogeyman, and how much are we going to see he's totally not fit to fight? It was the latter. He didn't even make it past two rounds. And it wasn't because he was tired, per se, but it was just that, I don't know, because Joseph Parker just hit him with a great temple shot, and it was an odd knockout where Bacoli got hit with the shot, and it was delayed. And he just kind of stumbled back, and then his legs just totally gave out, fell down, and, you know, corner threw in the towel, as they should. He was not all there when he got up. Very good performance from Joseph Parker. It's just interesting to me how he goes the distance with Deontay Wilder and Zhile Zhang, and then, you know, gets in there with Martin Bacoli and just puts him out in two rounds. It was crazy. I thought it was a very good performance from Parker. I really feel bad for him. He's been waiting so long to get this big fight after so many good victories. And Bacoli was a big fight. He was still in a big card, but it wasn't his world title fight. So he's got to wait even longer. And the question really emerges from this fight is, we don't know what's next for any of these guys in the heavyweight division now. You had, you know, Bacoli apparently is still supposed to fight Efe Ajagba in May, which to me, I'm like, okay, hold on. We need to talk about what Bacoli was in there. Is this still the Bacoli who destroys everyone in sparring? Or was that the Bacoli that's, you know, fat and out of shape and, you know, on 2 days' notice? Because if it's the Bacoli and we say, oh, it doesn't matter, he was in there, then it's kind of hard to say, oh, he deserves to get that world title eliminator, you know, off of a second round knockout loss. I don't know if that makes sense, but I think that, you know, he deserves a big fight as well, because he came in there, he saved the card. Did he have a good performance? No, he didn't look very good. But he was also on 2 days' notice. So do we kind of forget this happened just because it was so out of nowhere and it wasn't the real Bacoli? Or are we going to say, I mean, he still did get knocked out in two rounds by Joseph Parker? I don't know. It's so odd. But apparently His Excellency says, I'll see you in May. He says we still have a big fight for him in May. So I'm really interested, because if he were to beat, I think he will beat Ajagba, then he's mandatory for Daniel Dubois, and then that's the big fight to make in the heavyweight division. You know, where now he's gotten beat by Joseph Parker. I'm like, I don't know if that's the fight I want to see. I think there's a handful of guys in the queue ahead of him. I think Joseph Parker is ahead of him. I think Ajit Kabayel is ahead of him. We're going to talk about that. Actually, let's talk about that now, because we got to do some heavyweight matchmaking here. Ajit Kabayel and Zhile Zhang was one of the better fights of the card, I believe. You know, Zhang came out hot. We knew that Zhang was going to, that this was what was going to happen, was that if Zhang was going to do it, he was going to do it early. He's very powerful, but he doesn't have a great gas tank. Ajit Kabayel, we knew that he was going to try and move around and try not to get hit too much by Zhang. And then once Zhang gets tired, target that body and put him down. And that's exactly what happened. I gave Zhang the first two rounds, I think. I'm pulling out my scorecard here. But I thought that Zhang came out very hot, very heavy, and was looking good. I was like, wow, like he may do some stuff here. I gave him the first two rounds, then I gave Caballel the next two rounds, because I think it was round three where I just saw Caballel really start to get aggressive and put a lot of pressure on Zhang. And I was surprised. He was doing well. And not that surprised that he was doing well, but surprised that he was starting this early. I was like, oh, this isn't going to go much longer. Round five, while Caballel is again, like, I think he's starting to pick up a lead here, Zhang drops him. He's just that strong. It wasn't even like a big shot. Puts him down on his ass. Fantastic shot. Caballel recovers very well. Sees it to the end of the round. You know, he wasn't too shaken up from it. And sixth round, comes out again, and Caballel just, all right, I got to get him out of here. Goes to the body. You know, we'd already seen him hurt Zhang to the body earlier in that fight. He goes to the body in round six, and he hurts him, and it seems like Zhang almost, like, he takes steps back, goes, oof. And then it looks like his glove touches the ground. It looks like that could have been a knockdown. Doesn't get counted as one, but kind of looks like it. But regardless, 20 seconds later, Caballel comes and hits him to the body, and Zhang just takes a knee, and he just does not get up, and he looks in a lot of pain. So, really good performance from Ajit Caballel. You cannot count this guy out. I'm glad that I came around on picking him. I was unsure at first because, you know, Zhang is the more experienced guy, but Caballel has now beaten Makhmudov, Sanchez, and Zhang in a row. He's at the top of the heavyweight division. And let's talk about this heavyweight division. You've got unified champion Alexander Usyk, IBF champion Daniel Dubois. Look, before Daniel Dubois got sick and had to pull out of this fight, it was clear what was going to happen. The winner of Daniel Dubois and Joseph Parker would go on to fight Alexander Usyk to reunify the titles for a new undisputed champion. And that just made a lot of sense. You know, if it was Dubois, then it was, you know, Usyk-Dubois too. They rematch after kind of a controversial outcome in that fight with a low blow early on. And then you get to do it for undisputed. Joseph Parker, been looking for his world title shot. He continues his fantastic run beating Daniel Dubois. And then all that's left is Usyk. So I think that all the fights made a lot of sense. The question is now, what does Dubois do? Because Dubois can honestly go right back into that Usyk fight. I didn't think that after he beat Anthony Joshua, I was like, I mean, yeah, I would love to see him fight Joseph Parker more, but he doesn't need to. He's totally worthy to go in there and fight the winner of Usyk Fury. And when they did the Parker fight, I was glad because I was, okay, good. We get to see a really good matchup there. But now it kind of feels, well, he does owe Joseph Parker this fight that was promised to him. Parker still didn't get his title shot. Does it now become Dubois Parker again? But who, and then in that case, who does Usyk fight? Does Usyk fight Caballel? Because that's a pretty good fight. But it also feels, okay, Caballel is jumping the queue ahead of Dubois or Parker to get the Usyk fight. I don't know. Another option is Usyk fights Dubois. And they just go for undisputed. Parker and Caballel fight in the meantime. But then I feel bad for Parker because, you know, he was promised his world title fight. And, you know, he's going to have to wait again. He's going to have to fight another top contender, a guy who's been, you know, upsetting everyone. And Dubois, it seems that he just got sick week of the fight and avoided, kind of avoided fighting Parker to just go right back into the Usyk fight. Or you can do Parker versus Usyk because he kind of deserves that fight now. And Dubois blew his opportunity to fight Usyk. Even though he got sick, I know, but Parker showed up. He had an amazing performance. Now it gets to be Parker versus Usyk and maybe Dubois versus Caballel, Dubois versus Anthony Joshua too. I think Anthony Joshua is in this picture as well. You forget that he has superstar capabilities. He still gets to jump that queue. If you say Anthony Joshua versus Ajit Caballel, I'm like, that's a really good fight. You know, AJ's still at the top 10 heavyweight probably, and Caballel's looked very good. The big guy, that he's got an interim, he's got a mandatory title shot with him. And that's a fight that, you know, that's a good comeback fight for AJ. It's not like he's fighting Daniel Dubois or Usyk, but he's still fighting a very tough challenge. Or do you throw AJ right back in with Dubois? You know, the problem there is that I feel like I don't know if that's fair to Dubois for him to have to rematch AJ again, the guy he just knocked out and he got the superstar, you know, position from. So it just doesn't make a lot of sense. It's so hard to figure out what is next for the heavyweight division. The plan was so clear for so long. And now none of it makes sense. What I do want to see is Anthony Joshua versus Tyson Fury. And His Excellency said that he's going to try and still make that fight. He's going to try and get Fury out of retirement, but we'll see if it happens. I'm hopeful it does, but I don't know if it will. I think that it's time for AJ. If Fury says in the next like couple of weeks, no, like I'm not taking any money, I'm not coming back, then it's time for AJ to move on and find a new opponent. That could be Caballel. That could be Parker. That could be Dubois. or someone else. The winner of Bekele Ajagba, maybe. Or Zhang. I don't know. Or Wilder. There's so many options for him. But we need to figure out what's going on with the heavyweight division and what fights are going to happen next. Oh my goodness. I'm just remembering how many fantastic fights were on that card yesterday. How many big names. A very big name here in America. Shakur Stevenson. You know, I'm not here for the Shakur hate. I know that he is kind of boring, but I think he's a really, really good talent. And I think that he had a very good performance against Josh Padley. Did he spend 9 rounds in there with an electrician who took the job on 4 days' notice? Yeah. However, that's not – Shakur is not really a he's not a big puncher. He's just not. And not every fighter is going to come in there and knock him out. And that's not the measure of, oh, wow, it took you 9 rounds to knock out an electrician. Like, that's not what it's always about. Because Josh Padley's still good. And Shakur dominated that fight. The first round, you could maybe edge it to Padley. He had some good work there. Shakur took him a minute to get going to download information. But I thought Shakur dominated the whole fight. I gave him every round just like I expected to. And I thought that he looked entertaining in there. If you noticed, he had a more entertaining style. He had some thudding shots. Did he hurt Padley a lot? No, not too much. But he had some shots that looked like they had impact. And, you know, ends it with 3 body shots, which I was just like, this, you know, very good performance. Very good way to put him out of there. And, you know, prompts a corner stoppage right at the end of the 9th round. And that's exactly what you want to do. Unfortunately, it seems that Shakur injured his hand yet again. You know, I mean, he's just got very fragile hands, it seems. And he says he can only fight twice a year. I really want to see the Tank fight next. My only worry with it is Shakur's hands and the fact that no matter how good his performances have been in dominating these guys, he's fighting guys that aren't world level. Maybe De Los Santos and Haritunian may have been world level, but not world champion level. Not top of the 135-pound division. Neither of those guys are top 5 lightweights, if you ask me, at least not right now. Josh Padley certainly isn't. I know he was a late replacement, but even if he fought Floyd Schofield, you know, Shakur isn't fighting someone like William Zepeda or Raymond Moratalla or Andy Cruz or Zaur Abdullayev, you know, all these other really good contenders. And it's not his fault, per se. I'm not saying he should, but he has to. But some of those guys, like Zepeda, he should have fought. And I know he tried to fight Zepeda, but it's just hard, man. It's hard to say what is next for him. I think that what I want next is Tank Davis. And if Tank gets a good win next weekend, then we got to say, all right, y'all both just fought. You should be on the same timetable pretty much. We know Shakur's a little bit injured, and we know Tank likes to take long breaks in between fights. Let's do this fight, you know, late summer, early fall, like August, September, October time. That's what I want to see. I need to see these guys fight. I don't know if it will happen, but I hope that if Tank really does only have like 3 fights left, that he says, you know, let's go big. Let's do Shakur. Let's do Haney. Let's do Tio, Ryan, just whoever. Let's go big. And, yeah, it needs to be a big fight for Shakur definitely next because I thought that he did look really good. I thought he was more entertaining. I enjoyed watching him. Let's talk about this WBC middleweight title fight. So we had Carlos Adames defend his title against Hamza Shiraz to a draw. And it was really, really weird because Shiraz has been one of my favorite fighters over the past year or so. I think that he's been on a tremendous rise. I thought he was going to come in. I thought he was going to win this fight. I thought it was going to be a very exciting fight. And I thought that he was going to get himself a late stoppage. And he looked awful in there. He just wasn't starting anything. He was so passive. I'm like, dude, this is your world title opportunity. You need to take it. And I scored in this fight. I mean, he still made it a close fight. I thought that he did what he had to when he needed to. I gave him rounds 1, 3, and 4. As well as the last 2 rounds. But everything else, rounds, I gave Adames round 2, and 5 through 10 I gave to Adames. He was totally in control of that fight for a lot of it. And, I mean, Shiraz, we know he's got this world-ending power. He's got very strong power. And I know Adames does as well, but in Shiraz, when he did throw power, he had some effect. He was doing good. He just didn't do enough of it. And it seems like he didn't realize that until the last 2 rounds. Where it's like, dude, where has this been all fight? And it was so frustrating, so disappointing to watch. Now, afterwards, we hear that apparently he may have broken his hand. And I'm like, okay, that explains it. Because Shiraz is a strong fighter and he's a smart fighter. And this it didn't make sense, the guy I was watching on Saturday. So now we know, okay, it was likely a hand break, which would explain why he was so inactive for so much of the fight and wasn't throwing much. But you know, I feel bad for Adames, who's the away guy, and he only gets a draw when he probably could have gotten a win. Do I hate the draw? No, but it just feels bad because I do feel like he deserved to win. I think that they need to rematch it. Even though it wasn't a very good fight, I think that if Shiraz is 100%, then you get a really good fight in there. Yeah, let's talk about Ortiz Magomedov. Listen, this may have been number one and number two at 154 pounds. If Terrence Crawford has moved up, then who does that leave? You know, and it moved up with not the sights of coming back down in the next year or two. So you've got these two. You've got Sebastian Fedora, Bakram Mirzazaliyev, Sergey Boachuk, you know, some other good names like Xander Zayas, Charles Cromwell. But I think that the top few guys would probably be Ortiz, Magomedov, Mirzazaliyev, and Fedora. And to be honest, I think Fedora is probably fourth place out of all those guys. And I think that, you know, Mirzazaliyev could be number one, but I thought that Ortiz and Magomedov could also both be number one. So I was very excited for this fight. And it was not as exciting as we were hoping for. Both this and the Adames-Shiraz fight, those were the two fights I feel like a lot of people were like, oh, these could be fight of the nights, and they were probably the worst fights of the night. They weren't bad, but they were probably the worst. Ortiz-Magomedov was a very good fight. It was very close and competitive for a lot of it. You know, Magomedov did better in the first half of the fight, and I had a very even go in the middle part of the fight, but then I thought that for the later rounds that Ortiz didn't dominate per se, but I thought that he was taking a lot more rounds. And it seems that it took him a while to really get active. Kind of similar to Shiraz. You know, I was expecting a very active, aggressive fighter in him. And he wasn't for a bit, but then when I think it was around eight was when it was like, okay, this is the Virgil I'm used to seeing. And that was when he turned it up, power shots on Magomedov, and Magomedov just didn't have much left. He just all of a sudden, after moving around and being the more active guy, even though he wasn't the come forward fighter, he was the more active puncher for sure. He just slows down. And I was disappointed to see that because I was like, man, like you were whooping his ass. Not whooping his ass, but you were whooping some ass. Like you were doing really good. You were moving around. You were hitting him well, very precise. This is Magomedov we're used to seeing. And then that just started to fade in the second half. Ortiz takes what I believe was a unanimous decision. I had it 115-113. I had like almost every fight on this card 115-113. It was so close. You know, there were some bad scoring tonight. There was some very bad scoring. I mean, Virgil winning 117-111 is bad. Adames winning 118-110 is bad. Paterbia and Bivol scoring was good. You had Buatsi and Smith, which we'll talk about in a second, but they scored Smith 119-110, one of the judges, which was bad, but you know, not some good scoring. Let's talk about Buatsi and Smith. Or first of all, let's say what's next for Ortiz and Magomedov. I want to see Ortiz versus Mirzazaliyev next. That's the fight. Those two are massive power punchers. Probably, I think the best two guys at 154 pounds. I want to see that so bad. That'd be so good. As for Magomedov, I'm not too sure. I thought about Boachuk and Fedora, but I think Fedora and Boachuk should fight after Fedora has his easy fight against Booker. For Magomedov, I'd like the I don't know how I feel about Xander Zayas. I just don't think that one makes sense. Charles Cromwell could be good. I saw somebody suggest Josh Kelly. I think that makes a lot of sense. It could be kind of a boring fight, but I think that Magomedov wins that one. There are a lot of very good names at 154. I need to do more research and figure out what would be best for him, but he's still one of the best fighters in the division. Probably still top 5, 6, 7. But definitely a disappointing performance. Buatsi and Smith put on a cracker. My goodness. You know, and Smith really surprised me. I really thought Buatsi was going to win this one, you know, pretty easily. Not easily, but more convincingly. And he just didn't look great. And I thought Smith looked fantastic. And it wasn't that Buatsi was performing bad. He performed very well. Just not as good as he usually does. And nowhere near as good as Smith was performing. And it was a very close fight still. Again, I had it 115-113 in the favor of the Liverpool native. But looking at my scoring, you know, I thought Callum Smith had a really good start to the fight. And, you know, it was very even for really most of the fight. I had it going, I gave the first two to Smith, the next two to Buatsi, the next two to Smith. Then I go Smith for round 7. And then I give Buatsi 8 and 9. So I actually had Smith down going into the last couple rounds. But then Smith did really well in round 10-11, and I had Smith up going into the last few rounds. I'm getting confused, my scorecard. But, you know, Buatsi came back a little bit towards the end, but then I had Smith winning the last round and sealing the deal. you know, very good performance. He even hurt Bouazizi a couple of times. He just seemed the more precise and honestly maybe even stronger puncher of the two. And I know that Bouazizi was taken to the hospital after, which really surprised me. I thought that he looked pretty good in there, but you never know. Maybe it was like a just totally energy depleted thing. That would make sense. He didn't look himself. He looked dead after the fight, just not celebrating and stuff. And I'm not sure, but hopefully he is all right. But what a fight they put on. That could have been the fight. That really almost hurt some of the other fights just by starting off the card so strong. But it was a fantastic, fantastic event. My biggest gripe was how the broadcast started at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard, and then they didn't bring out the first fight till like 11:40. There was nothing. It was just talking, and it was so odd. I've never seen that much of a delay. And then once the fight started going, there was no filler in between. It was straight action, 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 fight, fight, fight. The pacing was tremendous, I thought, for most of the night. It was just that late start was so weird. And you had Muhammad Al-Akil and Ziad Al-Mayayu fight, but there's nothing really much to say. But, you know, they did well. But I thought that it was a tremendous, tremendous show. Their next Turki Alo-Sheikh show, he's got one April 26th with Eubank Ben. There should be press conferences this week. And then May 2nd, I believe, in New York, and May 3rd in Riyadh. So we got some, you know, crazy like 1 week span there to put on like three shows in the span of 8 days. It's nuts. But you know, still some good fights to come. Huge night for the sport. This really could have been its own podcast, but we're going to talk about some more. Fantastic show. Let's talk about UFC Seattle. Okay, so this UFC fight night last night was very, very good. The prelims, we had seven prelims. All seven fights ended within the first two rounds. That's tremendous, tremendous. You know, looking at the card, you had some good fights. You had Nikolay Veretennikov losing to Austin Vanderford and then shoving him after, which was crazy. You know, you had Ricky Simone, which by the way, Veretennikov, very childish of him, shouldn't be allowed to fight again. That was a fair stoppage. Ricky Simone had a KO of the year contender. I mean, that was scary. The way that he just like put Basharat out with like one punch and just like his eyes just staring blankly at the ceiling. That was a very scary knockout. That is KO of the year, maybe. It was tremendous. You know, you had Mansoor Abdul-Malik had faced a lot of, you know, coming back competition from Nick Klein, but then came back and got himself a second-round stoppage. Melchizedek Costa submitted Andre Fili when Fili was on top of him. You know, just crazy stuff. Ion Kutelaba and Ibo Aslan was a fantastic, like, 2-3 minute fight. Both big shots coming back and forth from those guys, and then Kutelaba gets a submission. You know, the prelims were unbelievably good. It was awesome. And then you had main card, Alonzo Menifield and Julius Walker was a very good fight, very funny fight. I mean, and I'm just so disappointed in Julius Walker because this was his UFC debut, he was undefeated, and he just comes in there with Menifield and is, you know, doing very well. Like, he hurt Menifield like a couple times in the first round. And instead of getting on him, he just kept on trying to clinch him and take him down. I'm like, dude, what are you doing? You're not taking him down. Punch him. You're hurting him. And then that resulted in him keep on clinching and not going for the punch and stuff. He got hurt very badly in the first round. And the rest of the fight was in slow motion. They were both gassed out after the first 2.5 minutes of the fight. And I was shocked that this one, of how tired they were the guys who went all 15 minutes. But it was a good fight. I think they got fight of the night. Menifield, I mean, if you saw Dana White post his toe after, my goodness, I don't even know what happened there. It reminds me of Robert Whittaker's jaw, just like how like nasty it was. But it looks like his toe like exploded or something, or like his skin was open up. There was like flesh. It was disgusting. It was unbelievable. Brutal, brutal stuff. Gene Silva had a really good TKO over Melsik Bagdasarian. These fighting nerds are something else. I mean, they're just clearing out everyone. And they got so much aura to them. Really, really awesome stuff. Rob Font beat Gene Matsumoto in a very close fight. And, you know, part of me did not really want Rob Font to win just because of that really dirty shot off the glove trick he started the fight with. I remember I was like, wow, this fight started quick. And then they show the replay of it where they touch gloves. And as soon as he touches the gloves, he just moves his hand up and just punches Matsumoto in the face like twice. And I'm like, dude, that's dirty. Don't do that. That sucks. So, but he still gets the win. Brendan Allen and Anthony Hernandez rematched. They fought 7 years ago for the LFA title. Here they meet again in the UFC Fight Night co-main event. Really, really good grappling match there. There's barely anything standing up, but these are two very high-level grapplers, and it wasn't boring. It was very exciting. You know, I scored at 29-28 as well. I thought that Allen had a really good first round, but then I thought that Hernandez sealed the deal in the last two rounds and just was more effective and had more control. And Allen seemed that he was kind of surprised and disappointed at the decision, but I feel like you'd kind of have to expect that. You know, it was a close fight, but I thought Hernandez won fair and square. And then the main event. This one was really interesting. Going into this fight, I really did not know who was going to win. You know, I thought it was a really good fight. I love when the UFC matches up the guys in there that are ranked, like, really close together, you know? Just that makes, like, the most sense. You know, not like number 12 versus number 3. You know, I don't like those matchups. I like number 7 versus number 8, like this one. And I kind of thought, yeah, maybe I bet Song Yadong will probably pull it off. And he was. I gave Cejudo... Did I give Cejudo? I think I gave Cejudo the first round, maybe. I think I gave Cejudo the second round. But the really weird thing about it, the big talking point and how the fight ended was Cejudo gets poked in the eye by Song and then uses all of his time in the timeout, which I've never seen. I've never seen somebody use all 5 minutes. And at first, I thought it was a low blow. And I was like, what is he doing? Why is he taking this much time? And I was like, oh, it was an eye poke. And, you know, he's just sitting there. And it's like, dude, is he even going to keep fighting? Like, I've never seen someone take all this time before. They finished last minute of the round. I thought Song won that round as well. So I hit him up 29-28. You know, and then in between rounds, he's still talking to the doctors. And I'm like, dude, he's about to pull out of the fight. He's about to stop. And he says, I can't fight anymore. I can't see out of my left eye. And told doctor the doctor's got four eyes to him, so you know people are saying, oh, he quit. And even Dana White was kind of saying, like, I don't know what's going on with him. I'm like, dude, come on, be better. He clearly got hurt pretty bad with his eye. He posted afterwards what his eye looked like. There was blood in it and stuff, which is scary stuff. I mean, that eye poke was deep. If you can't see, you can't see. Put your health first. I wasn't mad at the him stopping the fight at all. And he didn't stop it to get a DQ or no contest. He stopped it to get a decision, which he lost by unanimously. So, you know, you can't even say, oh, he's looking for a way out. He was trying to find another way to win. He may have been looking for a way out because he couldn't see, but he wasn't going to win. So I'm not mad at it. The question is, do they rematch? Dana White says he doesn't want to see a rematch just because he didn't like the fight that much and maybe doesn't want to give Cejudo the rematch. I'm not sure. I think a rematch could make sense. It wasn't the most exciting fight. It was a good fight, but it wasn't like, you know, had great potential when watching it. I thought Song would just cruise to a unanimous decision, you know, a close fight, but I thought that Song was doing the better work and would continue to do so for the last two rounds. So I wouldn't be mad at another fight just because not a lot happened and maybe more could happen in this fight. Cause going into this fight, I was like, dude, whoever wins this gets himself like what, number six, number five, maybe you're you know, then you get yourself into the title picture. You get yourself into bigger fights, you know, that could eliminate you for the title. So, yeah, I think a rematch could be necessary. But very good fight night overall. It was their highest grossing North American fight night with, like, almost $4 million gate. So, yeah, really cool stuff. All right, real quick, just before we preview the Nakatani-Cuellar card, we had a fight night on Friday night on UFC Fight Pass from 360 Promotions. Cain Sandoval stopped Mark Bernaldez in the fourth round of the KO win. I think it was really a TKO, but California just calls everything a KO. Good performance. You know, looked good. I heard that his daughter has leukemia and he's fighting for her, so that's really sick. You know, he did that. But a decent card. There's some good fights. You know, some good stoppages. Christopher Rios pulled off a upset over Daniel Barrera. He looked very good. Gore Yuritsian had a second round stoppage win. Abel Mejia, Guadalupe Medina, their prospects, ate some good wins. Just a five-fight card. I enjoyed it. My issue is that they start these cards at like 10 p.m. on the East Coast, which there's just no need to. I think that they should start like really almost every fight night. Fight for anything should start at around the 7, 8 p.m. Eastern mark. I know that it's a little bit early on the West Coast, but you can start at 5 p.m. But, you know, decent fight card, whatever. Also on Friday, you had the Conlon Sports Show, which was so interesting to me because this was supposed to be on Pro Box TV. we find out it's not going to be on Pro Box. They just stopped promoting it at all. There was no promotion period. Not even like it wasn't going to be, it wasn't televised, but they didn't say anything. They didn't promote. They didn't post anything from the weigh-in. They just, on Friday, I'm like, I assume this fight is canceled. They just start posting winner, winner, winner. And I'm like, what happened? You know, and Khalil Majid in the main event was now in a sixth rounder where he just won by points. And I'm like, I mean, I'm not mad that I missed this card. It doesn't seem like much was going on, but it's just so weird that they didn't post anything from it. It seemed like it was in like a gym, you know, it was really weird. You know, I don't know if their Pro Box TV deal ended already. They decided they weren't going to go forward. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me because I thought they'd do good work together there, but I don't know, it was very odd, I thought, because they put on some decent shows in November and December. They had two pretty good cards, I thought, together. So I don't know. But, yeah, but that happened. So can't watch any of those fights. Really weird they didn't promote at all. You also had last night Luis Neri defeating Kayonosuke Kameda in Mexico in his comeback fight after losing to Naoya Inoue last May. He stopped him in the seventh round. Very good performance. Just relentless punishment. We knew this fight was going to be a banger. They're just going to go at it, and they did. Kameda was just moving around. He didn't really have a lot of success. Had some good shots here and there, but Neri just put it on him and was hurting him bad, just punishing him. And I believe he had two knockdowns in the seventh round. I think both, you know, to the body, was just kind of, Kameda was just getting tired and beat up. And, yeah, stopped the fight. You know, good stoppage, good fight, good return. Neri is still a top five 122 pounder, I think. So, listen, in the next year or so, Inoue is going to move up to featherweight. And all four of his titles are going to be vacant. And you've got all these guys that, yeah, Inoue's already beaten half of them. But they haven't fought each other, a lot of them. We're going to get some really good matchups at 122 pounds, where right now the only good matchups we have, it feels, are involving Inoue. And even then, it doesn't feel like they're good matchups because he just destroys everyone. So 122 is about to get a lot more exciting of a division. Even though Inoue makes it exciting, it's going to be more interesting to see the different powers at play and who will reign. All right, let's talk about this fight tomorrow. So, three fight card, two world title fights with Junto Nakatani and David Cuellar. They're both undefeated. They fight for the WBC Bantamweight Championship. Also on the card, you have Seiya Tsutsumi making his first defense of his WBA Bantamweight title. He beat off Takuma Inoue in October. He fights Daigo Higa, who just fought Yoshiki Takei in September when he challenged him for his WBO Bantamweight title. Very good fights there. And then also on the card, probably the most interesting fight to me is Tenshin Nasukawa versus Jason Maloney. Let me double check if it's Jason or Andrew Maloney. I can never remember. They're twins. You know, one of them is at 115. One of them is at 118. Both former world champions. I believe this one is, let me check here, Jason Maloney, yes. So Jason Maloney held the belt and was beaten by Take in May. This is his first fight since then. And he's in there with Nasukawa, who has a combined 53-0 record across kickboxing, boxing, and MMA. The guy is a superstar in Japan. Absolutely. And, I mean, what fights? He's only had five fights in boxing so far, two knockouts. He looks very good. I was expecting him to get another pretty good fight. I was not expecting him to fight Jason Maloney. That is a really tough fight. So I'm really excited to see this. And they're fast-tracking this guy for a world title. Like, Maloney was literally just world champion. If he beats Maloney, I mean, I think that he's probably going to get a world title shot next. I think against Decay. I think that that's kind of the plan that they're pursuing. Who's the IBF champion? Is that Nishida? I think that's Nishida, yeah. So, or Ishida. Which one? I can't remember which one it is. But, yeah, so there's a lot of good fighters at 118 pounds. All of the lower divisions are just dominated by Japanese fighters. They're so exciting to watch. I mean, and they're getting good matchups now. I think every matchup on this card is good. Tsutsumi Higa is going to be a banger. I think Tsutsumi wins. He is so fun to watch. He's just all action. Higa had a really good performance against Take. You know, he could have even won that fight. I think that may have even been a draw, or Take won it by like split decision. But, you know, really good potential in that fight. Nasukawa Maloney should be interesting. I think Nasukawa will probably win just because of how good he looks. I think Tsutsumi will retain. I definitely think that Nakatani will retain, but this fight is going to be more interesting and, you know, better than Nakatani's last few fights have been, where he's just blown them out of the water. I think this fight, you know, Nakatani's going to have some, he's going to have some challenges in front of him, but nothing that he shouldn't be able to handle. And after this, Nakatani must be in a unification match if he's not fighting Naoya Inoue. I want to see the Inoue fight so bad, but I don't know if we're going to get it. Definitely not going to get it next. I think we will get it maybe, but it seems like we may get it too late. But regardless, if he's staying at 118 pounds, he needs to unify next. I'd be fine with Tsutsumi. I'd be fine with Nishida. I'd be fine with Take. Any of them. It seems like they kind of want to do the Nishida fight. I think that they talked about that. But the fact that, but I think that he's with a different promoter, and he and Tsutsumi are with the same promoter, I believe. So I think that fight makes a lot of sense. There's just so many good fights in Japan that get put on, and this is a really good three-fight card. I'm excited for it. In March, halfway through, you got the Taraji Akui card, which I'm praying gets a U.S. broadcast deal. I don't care where it is, but I need to watch that fight. It's a really good card as well. I think it's like three world title fights on it, but yeah, this should be really good. It's on ESPN Plus tomorrow morning. Unfortunately, it's starting a lot earlier than I would have liked. I feel like usually the Nakatani cards start at like 5 a.m. This one, I believe it could have been changed, but I think that it's slated to start at 3 a.m. on the East Coast, which would make it, you know, 12 a.m. on the West Coast. Not much better. Yeah, it'll be 3 a.m. here. Not good. Not good. I don't want to stay up. I don't want to get up that early. So I'll probably be watching that one a little bit delayed. Maybe I'll wake up and watch the Nakatani fight on time and then watch back the other ones, or I'll just watch back the whole card delayed. But so I won't be scoring live during them. But, you know, I'm very excited to watch these cards. I don't know if there's a fourth fight that's going to be on the broadcast or if it's just going to be these three. But regardless, I'm excited. Should be some good fights. And we'll talk about that on Tuesday's episode for sure. We'll break those fights down. Okay, let's talk about some news. Shouldn't be too many headlines, but there's still a good bit, so let's just run through it. So Yankiel Rivera and Angelino Cordova have been ordered by the WBA for a flyweight eliminator title fight. As for who, I believe that the current champion at 112 pounds for the WBO, it should be Sergio Yukui, or Yuri Akui. And Seijo Yuri Akui, and he'll be fighting Kenshiro Taraji, which we just mentioned, on March 13th for the Unified titles. You know, so after that fight, there will be a WBC and WBA Unified champion. Winner of that will be ordered by the WBA at some point or another to fight the winner of Rivera and Cordova. This is a fantastic fight at 112 pounds. Yankiel Rivera has only had a few fights professional. I think he's like 5-6-0, something like that, but he's very good. You know, he's gone the distance a handful of times. He's in there with Cordova, who fought Julio Cesar Martinez in March and didn't win, but it was a very close fight, very good fight. And then it was overturned to a no contest, a fight that a lot of people thought he won. And we found out that Martinez was on PEDs. Fight gets overturned to a no contest. So Cordova remains undefeated. You know, this should be a really good fight between the two, I think. I'm really excited to see it. I think that Rivera is Puerto Rican, and I think that Cordova is Colombian. This will probably land on a matchroom show in Puerto Rico, I'd have to think, but really good fight. I've been waiting for Rivera to get his title shot for a long time, and it seems like it's imminent. Speaking of matchroom, their Emma Williams Patrice Volney card got officially announced with some more fights on it. You've got Jose Roman rematching Jaleel Hackett. They fought in Puerto Rico in December. Controversial fight. Roman won, took Hackett's undefeated record, but kind of controversial. A lot of people thought that Hackett won, including myself. So they're going to run that one back. That should be good. You've also got Jermaine Ortiz returning on the card. He's in with Yomar Alamo. This is a very good fight card. You've got those two fights I just mentioned, Jermaine Ortiz, former world title challenger. And then you've also got on the card Emma Williams, Patrice Volney, the main event. Like I said, Omari Jones' pro debut, and Edgar Belonga returning against an undefeated opponent. Very good fight card there. You've got Pablo Valdez and Carlos De Leon on the undercard. You know, should be a really fun night at the Crib Royale. Those cards are always very exciting. Eddie Hearn wants to make Shahbaz Masood, Peter McGrail in May or June. That is a fantastic fight for them to make. You know, two young British talents. You know, I mean, Masood is the IBO world champion. McGrail is, you know, he was supposed to fight for the British. McCann, you know, was on PED, so got pulled out of that. But he still had a good win on the December 21st card. You know, do I think that McGrail is necessarily up to world level like Masood is? yet? No, not really, but I think it's a really good fight for them to make. I think that's still a competitive fight. I would favor Masood, but McGraw has a chance to win that for sure. So I think that's a really good fight. Hopefully they can make it done for early summer. Xander Zayas versus Charles Conwell next. Apparently both of these guys were talking back and forth and had a verbal agreement on social media. They're number one and two in the WBO. They could easily be an eliminator for the winner to fight Sebastian Fundora. That is a fight to make. And I think right now it's Zayas, Conwell, Kelly, and honestly now Madrimov. And there's probably some other names I'm forgetting, but those guys are all, I think, fighting to get themselves into a position to get a world title now, I think. While you've got Ortiz, Murtazaliev, Fundora, and Boachuk, who should be fighting each other soon for world titles. I'm very excited to see what's going to go on. You've also got Yoenis Tejas in the picture. I think he's going to fight for an interim world title at 154 pounds on the Tank Roach card, or maybe that's an eliminator. I'm not sure, but 154 is such a robust division. I really love the Zayas Conwell fight. I think that makes so much sense for both of them. They're both undefeated. They're both waiting to get their big fight. Make it against each other. The Mayer and Ryan 2 undercard with Michaela Mayer and Sandy Ryan. They announced who's going to be on that undercard. We already know it's going to have Brian Norman, Derek Cuevas. And then you've got Bruce Carrington fighting Jose Enrique Vivas, I believe is his name. And they're both very highly ranked with the WBC. Likely an eliminator for the winner to fight Stephen Fulton. Also on that card now, we know we're going to get Emiliano Vargas, who's very good. You're going to get Troy Isley, who's honestly getting close to a title shot. He's probably top 10 with the WBO and maybe even top 10 overall at 160 pounds pretty soon. He's a very good fighter. Tiger Johnson on that undercard as well. You know, he's supposed to fight on Valentine's Day, and his opponent missed weight, so they weren't able to fight. And Daedric Crocklum, who I'm not too familiar with, but we'll see. It seems like they're going to put a pretty good card on at the Fontainebleau. There's some really good prospects and champions on this card, so I'm excited. Conor McGregor posted him with the BKFC belt saying, oh, I'm going to be champion of the world with bare knuckle. You know, I would be shocked if he never ends up fighting with them. He's a part owner of it. He promotes with them. You know, I would think that he's a part of the team and he wants to fight there. And I know that he's stuck up with his UFC deal. I really don't know if he's ever going to fight again. We're going on 4 years of him not fighting. I've never seen someone take that long of a break at such a high level and then return and just keep fighting normally. He's supposed to fight with two more times with the UFC, and then his contract ends, but we'll see what happens. He definitely does not want to fight with the UFC. He definitely wants to fight with BKFC, so I don't know. Floyd Schofield will be a free agent in a few months, it says. He'll be free from Golden Boy, and I'm not sure why, because Golden Boy is stuck with him. I think this may be because Oscar De La Hoya seemed a little bit disappointed. You know, he seemed to be upset. He seemed to care for Schofield, and you know, he was hospitalized and he was worried about him, but he also, you know, felt bad for all the talk. You know, he apologized to Shakur for Floyd and his father's crazy comments and said that it was a little bit outlandish and they may not have liked that. And a lot of these, especially American fighters, when, you know, stuff doesn't go their way, they say, okay, we have to get a new team, we have to get a new promoter, you know, and I don't like that, that mentality. So we'll see what happens, but he's saying he's going to leave Golden Boy in a few months. When Golden Boy got him a world title shot, although they also didn't want it, so maybe he feels they don't believe in him. Development to come for sure, but he definitely missed out on an opportunity this week, unfortunately. Diego Pacheco is set to return in May. That's the hope, at least, that he would headline. The names that were mentioned, they mentioned Caleb Plant, Jaime Munguia, Trevor McCumbie, I think Edgar Belonga maybe. So some good names at 168 pounds. There's a lot of really good fighters there. And I want to see them start fighting each other more and not just all waiting for the Canelo sweepstakes. And I love that Pacheco is, because he's the only one of those guys, almost the only one, that hasn't already fought Canelo. So I say that, you know, in May, you do one of those big fights for him. Oh, or on Billy. That was another one. Maybe it wasn't Berlanga, but they mentioned him, Billy. So I would love to see that. You can honestly get him on the Canelo undercard. Seems like they're going to put a lot of 168-pounders on it. You know, I really want to see Pacheco in a big fight next. We had the Steven Nelson fight was very good. I like to see him in like a 50-50 fight. We'll see what happens. Misfit signed bronze Olympian from Brazil, Abner Teixeira da Silva Jr. So a bit of a long name, but this is very surprising. Misfits has slowly and quietly been building a pro roster of prospects. They've got some pretty good fighters. Amir Anderson is a very good standout from the amateurs. You know, and it's surprising that Misfits were able to lock him down. My worry is that they won't be able to keep a lot of these guys active. They say they want them to fight like 5-6 times a year, but they're just not doing that. They only have a couple of cards. They only have like 8 cards a year themselves. Plus, you know, I know that they can like send them out. I know that they sent Jahan Ingram onto a Wasserman show when obviously they're a sister company to Wasserman. But, you know, I want to see them fight these guys a lot more often because they deserve to. Yeah, but we'll see. But this is a very big signing for him. An Olympian is very surprising that he went with Misfits, and he's a heavyweight as well. So that's very good that you want a potential heavyweight champion one day. We'll see how they develop him. This is going to be really interesting to see if Misfits is able to actually make a dent in professional boxing as well. Frank and Eddie, Matchroom Queensberry, the 5v5 rematch potentially happening in July. HE said that they're working on it. They're talking about it. As for what fights, I mean, I'm not going to try and theorize what fights. There's so many fights that could happen. The one that I would like to see headline it is Anthony Joshua Tyson Fury. That's bigger than a 5v5, but I want to see that fight happen so bad. I know it may not happen, but His Excellency said that he wants it. He said that he's talking to Tyson Fury and trying to tell him to come back, but we'll see. I really need to see that happen, though. Another thing with His Excellency, he says that Garcia-Haney doubleheader, you know, they're going to be fighting. Garcia's fighting Rolly Romero. Devin Haney's fighting Jose Ramirez. It will be in New York. His Excellency confirmed that. We were told May 2nd in Times Square. I still think it's going to be May 2nd. I believe he said that. But we don't yet know the actual location. We were hearing Times Square. And when asked on broadcast, it's going to be Times Square, he was reluctant to say that. He said, it will be somewhere in New York. I will announce it. So I think that means that they're trying. They wanted to do Times Square, but they're now unsure if they're going to be allowed to. Or they're, you know, still unsure they're going to be able to, but they're working on it and haven't gotten it confirmed yet, which I like. Don't announce it until it's official. So I think that we'll hear about that very soon, what's really happening, where it is. And Teofimo Lopez seems to have been added to that card. He tweeted saying May 2nd, you know, something about like, yeah, we back big fights. And, you know, that he adds on there with, like I said, the Garcia and Haney fights plus a Bacoli Ajagba fight. If that's still happening, I believe that's still the plan. As for Hutia fights, I like the Richardson-Hitchens fight. They're both New York guys. That's a fantastic four-fight card. Oh, my goodness. So hopefully that fight gets done. Really, anyone Tio fights, I'll be happy with. Unless, you know, not anyone, but you know what I mean. And last thing we'll talk about, Dana White teased the possibility of Merab Dvalishvili and Sean O'Malley rematching for the bantamweight strap in the UFC. You know, I'm really not mad at it. 135 doesn't have a ton of superstars at it. I mean, if you tell me who's next for Merab, I wouldn't be able to tell you. The number one fight I would say is probably Pantoja, for Pantoja to move up and fight Merab. You know, but other than that, I feel like he's beaten Umar. You know, Peter Yan, I'm like, yeah, I don't know if he's ready for the title shot, if he deserves it right now. You know, you're going to have Sandhagen and I think Figueiredo are fighting, but they're not going to be for the title shot. There's not really a lot of other names. It's really just Sean and Yan and Umar, and I'd like to see O'Malley and Yan fight again, you know, to really solidify who gets it, but I won't be mad at all if they bring back O'Malley to fight for the title again. He's a very big star for them. He's a growing superstar, and their fight, while it wasn't close, you know, O'Malley had room to improve, and, you know, he's done a good bit for the UFC, and you really don't have a lot of other guys, so do this. You know, get some of your other top contenders and some eliminators and see who can come out on top there. And then you've got the next contender set up. So I wouldn't be mad if Merab and Sean fought again, but I also wouldn't be mad if they didn't fight again. Sean had another fight. It's just, who was Merab going to fight? That is all that I've got for today. Long episode, I know, but man, what an event we had yesterday. And the UFC card was good as well, but the last crescendo was brilliant. I cannot wait for the next Riyadh Season Ring Magazine event. They're just so exciting just because they stack the cards. Everyone's there. These great, you know, competitive fights. This was probably the best card, probably best event yet. It was definitely the best card, maybe been the best event as well. Just so exciting, so much fun, great fights. These big fights are special. Next week we get another big fight with boxing, with Tank Davis versus Roach. I know it's not like the actual fight isn't a big matchup, but Tank's a superstar nonetheless. It's a pay-per-view event, and then after that we really won't have like a big boxing event or big boxing card until like Eubank Ben. I feel no pay-per-views until then, unless you count Misfits, and you know, you'll have some UFC pay-per-views, but boxing wise it's just gonna be, we'll have some good fights still. You know, Boots Stanionis is good. You've got that Queensberry heavyweight card. PBC and Top Rank have got some good cards, Matchroom as well. You know, there should be some good fights. So yeah, enjoy the fights for the next tomorrow. We'll meet again on Tuesday, likely, to discuss whatever news and break down tomorrow's card. Thank you so much for listening. Excited to see more fallout from this big card. And see what kind of fights happen next, because there's a lot of fights to be made. Thank you so much for listening. Peace out.